Welcome to the Strength to Be Human podcast with your host, author and playwright Mark Anthony Rossi. This show explores all forms of creativity for those searching for meaning and a place in the world. To err is human, but so is to love. Now, without further ado, here's your host.
Hi, folks, and welcome back to Strength to Be Human. This is Mark Anthony Rossi, your host. Always excited to be back. Right now, we're going to be working on episode number 46, a classic spotlight series, and this one on George Orwell. I wanted to do this for a while, but we had a bit of illness, and that delayed me. Sorry about that. But I'm excited to be back and to do this. So let's talk about George Orwell. Whenever you hear the word Orwell, it already rings bells in people's minds, fears, trepidation, bad dreams, because they think of Orwell and the Orwellian. It literally, his last name, which was, by the way, a pen name, brings up dreams of governments running over your lives, spying on you, taking everything over, knocking on the door and grabbing you in the middle of the night. Now, George Orwell, unlike many of the other authors that we have spoken about, both in the classic series and even in the social imperative series, he was the only author that I'm dealing with right now that actually had a pen name. So he was born Eric Arthur Blair, but he went with George Orwell. He felt more comfortable with that, I think, mainly because the substance of his writing, I know, no kidding, it was highly political. Now, there's a lot of things that people don't know about George Orwell's personal life, unlike many of the other writers who often began writing early on. George Orwell actually had a career before he began writing, and he wound up getting into the government, a civil service of England, where he's from, George Orwell being an English writer, and he became a police officer in the colony of India. And I believe this is where a lot of his ideas came from 1984, because when we think about that book, 1984, and that's his classic novel about a society that constantly kept people under control by being in a forever state of war with various continents on the earth. That's how they kept people off guard, because they were always at war, allow them to always control people that way. But I believe he got a lot of those ideas from the government of England. I think that its imperialist control of India and the way it went about things cruelly and unjustly, those were gave him thoughts about various ideas in the book, and especially the curbing of people's freedoms and, you know, the lack of civil rights and all that went on in India from England and its very poor treatment of that country and of people. I think that's where he got most of his ideas from. Now, he was a cop there for 8 years, and then he decided to give that up to become a writer. But he learned a lot there, and I think he learned a great deal about who he was as a man and helped form his beliefs and what he wanted to go forward, and that's when he decided to become a writer. I think he'd written a number of essays while he was a cop, and eventually some of those got accepted, and then he was off and running at that point. He didn't want to be a cop anymore. He wanted to be able to tell his tale. One of the first books he wrote was Down and Out in London and Paris, and that's when he went out, sort of like a journalist, a social explorer, to learn how people lived out on the streets, poor people in England and in France, London and Paris. And that was his first book. It was decently received, and it was able to allow him to continue on with what he wanted to do. Oddly enough, George Orwell was so political that he had a real political life even before he started doing the more serious books that he's known for. 1984 and Animal Farm, the two serious political books that he's known for. Not to say that down out in Paris, London and Paris wasn't political, because it was, but it wasn't fictional as much as those other books were. You know, talking animals and endless wars and people using TV screens in your house to look at you. I mean, that was pretty almost science fiction back when he wrote that. But he had a real life. He's very much interested in socialism, especially later on, democratic socialism. He got hurt and had a lot of lung problems when he went to fight for Republican Spain. And that came out in one of his other books, Homage to Catalonia, and that was a lot of his exploits there. Spain and his fight there was, I would say, another turning point. You could say the first real political turning point for him was what he had learned in India, and then how he left, which was relatively a safe job, and a decent paying job too, to take the chances on being a writer. George Orwell, unlike Huxley or many of the other British writers, did not come from a wealthy background. His family was pretty much lower middle class in England, and he was lucky to be able to even get to go to college. I mean, it was a struggle just to get all that set up. He was smart and bright, don't get me wrong, but England is not like other countries. It's a very, very classy country. They seem to be more worried about your background and your money than anything else, so not an easy thing, but he was able to do that. But that was his real first political turning point, was in India. His second one was in Spain. This is when he understood where, because at one point, Orwell was starting to side with communists. He believed that the essential goals of communism made sense even more than his stronger beliefs in socialism. But when he saw it in action in Spain, he knew that's not where he wanted to go. He knew that Stalin was actually an authoritarian enemy himself, and that he would be someone destructive for the world. So Orwell wound up becoming a committed anti-communist and someone that was generally a democratic socialist. He's very fascinating, Orwell, on this political side of things, mainly because, and this is where lots of artists, especially here in America, they go wrong in politics, because they like to live in the fantasy ideal world. It's like they never leave the TV or the movie script. And there's a reality beyond that, folks, the real life. All right, so it's so easy to talk about all these wonderful programs that you think are going to fix society, but who's going to pay for them? Because there's not enough rich people in the world. That means all the regular people have to pay for this nonsense. And that's one of the problems here in America and a lot of countries, is people propose these things and then somebody else has to pay for them. That's why folks don't like that sort of thing. They like to have a say in it, and then, you know, they can decide themselves. Not have some celebrity who lives in a mansion, you know, talking about they're okay with their taxes being raised. Well, that's great. I'm glad you're okay with that. God knows I'm not. I'm trying to raise a family here. Orwell was one of the few. I don't even know if I can count him on my hand, because he might be the only one. I'm serious. Maybe other than Dickens, and that was more than 100 years before him. But George Orwell was the only one that actually was so honest with himself and with the facts that he saw, that he didn't let ideology, he didn't let all that fantasy stuff, you know, take over his mind. He clearly saw from what he saw in Spain that Russia wasn't really practicing any type of socialism. They were simply a gangster government using communism as a front to try to take over other governments and eventually the world. He saw them as a dictatorship and what they were. Now, later on, when 1984 came out, many people made all these allusions to Russia and North Korea and blah, blah, blah. And I can guarantee you that when he was writing that book, he still was talking about the imperialism of England against India. And sure, he saw some stuff that Russia was trying to do in Spain. But remember, please, Orwell never got a chance to go to Russia, so he didn't see all the stuff that was going on over there. So any of those comparisons, where sometimes they were definitely accurate, that really wasn't the genesis of what he was trying to do. But he understood that, and for as long as he lived, Orwell was against Soviet communism and communism in general, because he saw the dangers of it. And he also understood that the only way a person can speak their mind was in a free environment. And if anything at all it was, he was interested in having a free society, regardless of whether you agreed with him or not. You know, he just didn't want to have something that was totally, made up from the beginning. That's what he learned in Spain. He learned that it didn't even matter if you agreed that, you know, the Spanish government was going to become a dictatorship and it was a worthy fight to fight against them, because he saw what the Soviets are doing, how they were routing out people that didn't even agree with them on the ground. They're already having a civil war inside the civil war. And that's what really gave him the clue to understand that, hey, this isn't going to work out. I need to make sure I adjust myself. And he did that in his books. He wrote Road to Wigan Pier about Northern England and some of the working conditions there. I know a good writing friend, Paul Brooks, was mentioned about that. He had visited, I think, his community or pretty close to his community and understood some of the conditions that was going on there, the work camps and the debtor prisons. I think they call them workhouses. It's amazing. Because you fall into a little debt, the next thing you know, you're a criminal. That's crazy. But that's what was going on there. Orwell was very important, mainly because what he had to tell about general societies and how democratic societies can go sideways and the wrong ways, and next thing you know, they can become a dictatorship, was really important for people to hear. It was always an important warning sign, a large bell rung throughout history to let us know, to remind us about losing our freedoms. And one of the ways that the freedom can be lost that Orwell had taught us was through language. And you'll see that in his book, especially in 1984, language was extremely important in how the society of 1984 was created. You know, if you had sex without permission from the government, that was a sex crime. You know, they had people trying to observe your thoughts called the thought police. They always had that saying, a big brother was watching, because even the words big brother, okay, which we know now is being a surveillance system of screens in your house and microphones. And if you guys know anything recently about the whole television scandal, where there was a television that can actually record you unless you shut it off. You can actually record all your programming and all that to use for advertisers, which is scary in itself that a corporation can do that. Now, Orwell never thought about that, but he's talking about a government doing it. But think about it. Big Brother. Even that sounds, we know now that it's an ominous thing, but when it's being told, it almost sounds benevolent. Yeah, Big Brother. Because, you know, you think of a Big Brother, someone who watches over you in a positive way. But Big Brother, in that context, and then the one we've learned later on, and, you know, 50, 60 years later, hey, it's something bad. They're looking after you. They're trying to observe you, trying to take your information. We're learning that more on the internet, and people are learning how to protect themselves. That was one of the real failings, and I don't mean this in a negative, mocking way towards Huxley or towards Orwell. They tried to predict the future, but their culprit was the government. In Huxley's world, the government used the positive things to put people off, so they didn't, you know, to obstruct them and pretty much take over their attention while their lives are being controlled, you know, through artificial birthing and having you at a job from birth and kind of putting you in that categorization, and then allowing free sex and drugs to run through your life to always keep you off balance. The so-called positive utopia, but it's still dictatorship. And then, of course, Orwell, with the endless wars and the endless surveillance and destroying and perverting language to where it could be used in the most insidious fashions. They never realized that technology could produce so much power for a corporation, or even now an individual. Right now, if you're worrying about Big Brother, it could be coming from a corporation really trying to learn your thoughts about various things you buy or how you live so they can try to get something sold to you and sell that information to somebody else. And of course, Orwell and Huxley never realized that the individual might not always be in jeopardy by a government, but they could be in jeopardy by another individual. We got camcorders, your neighbor could be spying on you. You know, people do all kinds of things against others using various pinhole cameras and technology. And so oftentimes the individual themselves could be in danger from other individuals. And these things, of course, it just never really occurred to Orwell or to Huxley. I think mainly because they're behind the utopia gone wrong ideas of these authors, there's the political agenda that they had. And that's fine. I'm not mocking it. It's just that it never really occurred to them that both corporations and individuals in the future can be even more dangerous to societies or to individuals' rights than a government can. And right now, I can't speak for the rest of the world, but here in the United States, you got to worry more about the corporation or the individual trying to take something from you, spying you, stalking you, or I mean, these sexual obsessions and outrages and rapes and harassments, they're not coming from a government, folks. They're coming from corporations to allow the crappy environment to do this. And, of course, from individuals. These are not coming from governments. Governments in America are not raping people. Individuals are. And in some cases, companies are liable because they allow their executives to create an environment that would be conducive to that kind of nonsense. So these are some of the things they missed, and that happens. I still think what they have to say is very important, don't get me wrong, because it is. But we now know, now in the future, in reality, that we have to take the Huxley Orwell things very seriously. We know from reality and from history that Orwell was right. We've seen governments like Libya and North Korea, China especially right now. China is probably the most sophisticated of the dictatorships using technology. They went beyond even what East Germany was doing, where they had cameras on every street corner. I'm told once they raided the Stasi headquarters, so Stasi was the secret police of East Germany, they found like literally two-thirds of the entire society were on some kind of role of being an informant for the government. Whether they're doing that to gain some extra money or some extra credits or some extra, you know, food or a better apartment or whatever, but they were always doing it for something, but literally they were informing. So they had an entire society rife with that kind of nonsense. Romania, very similar. But no one's near what China has been able to do in terms of their factories and electronics and the internet. All that stuff they're doing over there. Right now they're working on gene splicing, trying to create edited children, and who knows what kind of horrible consequences are going to be coming out of that. That's all government controlled. Even though they got companies there, there's no real companies that are free. They're all run by the Chinese government or monitored by them regardless. So there's a weird combination right there in China. But all those countries, including Russia, you can make some real allusions to 1984, and that'll stick, and that's something to learn there. Huxley, on the other hand, his vision is probably more closer, I feel, to reality than Orwell's is in terms of a bigger way. You know, a government can definitely distract the people by throwing out, you know, nonsense Hollywood and TV programming, allowing more and more of these drugs to become legal. And what the consequences of those are, you know, I can imagine the employers right now here in America, you know, literally have to have different rules depending on what state they're in. You can't ban somebody for having marijuana in their system if you happen to be based in one of those states that allow it. So literally you could be a corporation now in this country and simply have different rules from the different states you're in. Yeah, my employees can now smoke in this state, but in this state it's banned. They can't. Imagine them communicating about that. Hey, what's going on there, guy? Yeah, I'm smoking pot over here, and I'm working for the same company, and you can't. That's the kind of unusual stuff that's going on. And what this does to a nation's senses and a nation's thoughts and a nation's vision for the future, I can't see it being positive at all. I really can't. You know, I'm still firmly in the camp of that drugs are simply bad and stupid. And unless they have a medicinal purpose on a temporary basis, and believe me, I'm sometimes even on the fence on that. But I don't want to see people harmed or have to live in suffering just because I'm against something. I mean, if there's something that can help them and to get them through their crisis, fine. But there's simply no reason for some college kid to be smoking. And some states are even going further now with the magic mushrooms and peyote and mescaline and all these other drugs. So it's, you can see how it gets out of hand really fast. Huxley probably has a better take on the future than Orwell did. But still, what Orwell had to say was extremely important, and I definitely bring it back to the language. I mean, it's like necessary to have an idea about how language can control people if you use it the wrong way. I mean, governments use it all the time, and when they speak, you got to listen carefully or you won't catch what's going on. You know, Orwell talked about newspeak, basically the speak that comes out of the journalism. I know here in America, it's a sad tale. I mean, our journalism is eroded so much because it seems to have taken one side over the other. So half the times it's hard to even take it seriously. So they call it fake news, but Orwell already called it newspeak a long time ago. And he already got the idea on that. Doublethink. Basically, when one thing means another, that comes out of governments and corporations just as much as it comes out of the news media. But Orwell had it down on how all of these things can harm a society. Some people say thank God for the internet and various social medias because at least that's helping inform people and sort of a counterbalance to the traditional news media. Yeah, maybe that's all true. But it doesn't necessarily mean that all of that is any more accurate than the traditional news media. I mean, it could just be picking another side. And the whole point of this is supposed to be just to simply get the facts out and let the people think for themselves. And this is really the heart of what Orwell was all about. He wanted the people to think for themselves. And he knew they would have a hard time doing that if a government was throwing all these things at them. Whether it was an endless war or drugs or free sex or all that sort of stuff, that makes it harder to think for yourself. And, of course, whenever you pervert the language, again, there you go. Another difficult way to think for yourself because you have to, like, scratch your head. Well, what does that mean? Could it mean that? Could it mean this? Well, the more you muddy up the waters, the harder it is for people to think for themselves. Eventually, they either start thinking the way you want them to think or you lean them towards the think. Or they go in an even worse direction, one of paranoia, or one of just abject fear. And that probably works in an agenda for a society that wants to go towards that limited freedoms and dictatorship, but it doesn't work for the free person. And if there's anything that we are as writers, is we need to be free and not take a hold of the nonsense of the media and the nonsense of governments. Because if you can't stay apart from that, you become a tool for them, and you really stop becoming a writer then. Because remember, there's a big difference between propaganda, that's just the nonsense of writing something without really proving facts or including all sides, and then simply writing. This is why writers are usually not very good at politics. Because they don't want to include all these different sides. They just want to include whatever the point of view they have, and that becomes a problem because it's not writing anymore, it's propaganda. Now, as a free individual person who's not a writer, speaking something in a polling booth or, you know what I mean, in your home or even in a political convention, you're free to do whatever you want. But as a writer, that's another story. So I urge all you writers, and just like Orwell did, to be careful of getting involved in that. because most writers have a point of view in their own writing. You just don't want to include politics in it because that just kind of like ruins things, in my opinion. I've seen plenty of people right now, even some writers, but it's more now in the news media and the various politicians where, you know, they're trying to make allusions to the Holocaust and concentration camps because America's holding some people, you know, in detention facilities because they illegally crossed into the country. There's simply no comparison whatsoever. No one's being murdered and the parts they're kept and their property taken and nothing. There's simply nothing to that. And this is how things get out of hand really fast. So you got to be sure you're careful from that kind of nonsense. You don't get polluted by that kind of thinking. Okay? It's wrong to cross a person's, a country's borders, a sovereign border. It's illegal. You're criminal by doing that regardless of your circumstances. Period. Hopefully this government will learn to have places that are safer and have some better rules over here that they can simply return these people safely and not put them in situations where they can get sick or they can get injured. But that's not some government policy to do so. They're simply trying to tackle a difficult situation with people involved. And whatever you politically believe on that, that's fine, but you don't want to get carried away and make it something that it's not. Because that's, again, that's when the writer stops becoming a writer and you start serving somebody else's interest. And when you do that, you're not a writer anymore. You become, instead of George Orwell, you become the characters in his books, trying to control things by making stuff up. So please steer clear of that kind of nonsense. That's how if you want to learn about why something is the way it is, well, you could be a part of that. Or you can be against that sort of stuff by reminding people, hey, let's not get nonsensical over here. Now, one of the things I loved about Orwell, and if you read any of your books, you realize that he has not only his own particular style of writing, you'll learn that it doesn't really have a lot of flourish to it. You can tell from Huxley the advanced education he has and the kind of upward society that he came from. You can see it in his writing. It has a certain poetry to it. There's a certain beauty to it. A certain, like, almost a Shakespearean edge to it. Has a very classical type of feel. Orwell did not have that. Orwell was a very straight-ahead writer. Very, what we would have called in America, blue-collar, so to speak. Every man kind of thing. He didn't really have that. It's funny because many of the critics of his day who could not deny that he was a writer and he had impact and what he had to say had merit, but they didn't like his style. Some of them made fun of him. You know, and in fact, I've read criticisms of 1984 saying that, you know, it packed a wallop in terms of its impact and its thought frame. But as a novel, they thought it had flaws and it wasn't really an incredibly classically written novel. Yeah, that's all true. Doesn't mean he's not a good writer. That was just his style. He wasn't trying to be, you know, enormously classy or fancy about it. He was just trying to get the job done under some difficult circumstances. But I like that. I thought it added more authenticity and added more weight to the novel, especially in animal farms. You know, I'm more equal than you are in animals. It's amazing in that form. But I thought that really lent a lot more to what he was trying to do. And I think it's a great encouragement to a lot of writers out there that they don't have to go to the situation where, well, I got to copy these people who have this incredibly style, or I'm not really a writer. No, you can be who you are. And when I say about Huxley had this classicist type of style, it's not a derision of who he is. Huxley was only who he was, and he was only writing what he understood and what he was taught. Sure, he made his own adjustments for his own style, but that's pretty much who he was. Huxley was simply being who he was, and therefore, so was George Orwell. And that's fine, and that's how people should be doing things. And it's another reason why you could tell from beginning to end that George Orwell was utterly honest in his politics and how he ruled it in his work and how he ruled it in his own personal life. He's also very interesting, Orwell, in the sense that from the beginning to the end of his life, he kept strong ties to his family. You'll find many writers, Dickens, many of them, regardless of whatever social sympathies they had, and the decent people that they were, or Orwell was actually one of those decent people, they often didn't have big ties to their families. They also had a big row that went out of it, or big fight, or all kinds of issues. Many of them were estranged from their families and had to create their own. Orwell was one of those few people that had good family relations. He was able to explain to his father, hey, I left this safe job because this is what I want to do, and blah, 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 and went out and did it. Didn't spend 50 years over there trying to convince people, you know, trying to hug everybody and, you know, please like me. Orwell just did what he had to do. I'm going to Spain to fight a war. See you later. Bye-bye. I'll write a book about it. You can learn about it later. Have a good one. That's who he was. He wasn't out there yelling and cursing at people about his decisions. He just made his decision and he went and did it. People ultimately, because of the kind of man that he was, the honest man, the authentic man, the man that was trying to make a difference, I think they respected that, even if they didn't always understand that. I think from reading about Orwell a lot in his family didn't always understand him, but they appreciated the kind of human being he was. And they respected him ultimately. And that meant something to him. He kept close paths to his family, and that really was one of the beautiful things about him. Now, Huxley, he had some health issues. He got injured in the war, had to come back. I know he hurt his arm. He had a lot of breathing and lung issues, ironically. I think he might have had a couple of the lung ailments over the course of his years. I know he had it in India, and he was in the hospital a number of times. Ultimately, that's what he died of in 1950. He died of a lung ailment. He didn't have a very long life, but he was able to put a number of projects out there that really made a difference in his life, in the world. Many writers loved him, and many writers really appreciated what he did, even the ones that were politically disagreeing with him, because they actually went on the side of the communists, or they just wanted to believe that, you know, if we listened to everything Russia had to say in the Republic, the war would have been won and the dictatorship would have been gone. But that was really never going to be the case, because the Spanish War was a lot like Vietnam, in my opinion. You can't fight a war, which is ultimately a civil war, on the side that really wasn't for the people. And that's really what happened. The Vietnamese people, in the end, you know, they agreed with the communists because of all the colonization, all the hardships they faced. In the end, they wasn't ever going to side with the Americans, because they figured that was just going to be another colonial victory. And that's why they ultimately sided against us and went with them. And it's the same thing with the Republic in Spain. You know, they wind up going with Franco's government because in the end, that made more sense to them. It sounded like it was more for Spain. I know the church also had a big inkling in that as well. But they didn't think these outside forces made any sense or made a real difference. And that's why you're never going to win a war like that. You know, it's almost like you should have a test. If you're going to be in a civil war, make sure that even the side you're on is really, really fighting, you know, for that. And not just simply having a sympathy to the government itself, because you're fighting a losing battle and you're wasting your time. This is what history has taught us. It's what taught Orwell. Thankfully, he didn't lose his life over there. He was able to continue to write and do a lot of marvelous things to help really educate us. The Times supplement over in England has rated George Orwell as the number two British writer in their list of top 50 writers. Number two, he's just behind Shakespeare. This is the kind of impact this man had. And God knows he didn't write as much as Shakespeare did, and certainly not in any kind of lovely, flowery language. He was a straightforward writer, but number two. So that's the kind of impact he was able to make from his ideas. I often thought that Orwell was probably one of the few, very few, where it seemed like the personal values of his personal life seemed to, in many ways, infest his writing. And so many ways you could see that, you know, he lived a lot to what he wrote. A very honest portrayal of people that deserved freedom and could not live a free life if they didn't have a free society. But he just also understood, too, that that wasn't going to come just by you quoting some phrases or, you know, putting a dollar in somebody's box. You had to be willing to fight for that freedom and to be vigilant that it didn't get taken away or eroded from governments or even in our life now, where we're talking about also big corporations and even just negative individuals, whether they be drug dealers or computer hackers or just your neighbor, you know, jealous of, you know, your lawn. Those are the enemies you have now. But if you wasn't vigilant against those individuals or those entities, you could start losing some of that as well in your own life. And I believe many people have, especially here in America. I really wish that we had a system where we can have a bigger talk about that. I mean, right now we got a president that is just knocking many things over, kicking a lot of sacred cows. Some of that's good because we needed that. We've had a system all too long where both parties are simply saying the same thing, just in a different way. And that's not really conducive for anybody in a free society. Because just like you can't afford to have a monopoly in companies, because that raises prices and reduces employment and takes away, you know, some of your own, I think, freedom in terms of choice. Governments can do the same things if you have parties that are on the same lines. So I've always believed that, you know, my country, America, needed more than one party. We need more than two parties. We really do. It might be the only way for the future to where we can get a lot of what we had to say out there. Maybe it'll take a long time before those parties get big enough to have a national impact, but I bet you they can have a local one if we just do that, rather than just have the same two parties pretty much talking the same two nonsense things forever. We really can use that, because just that kind of diversity is necessary for freedom. We need it in commerce with companies. We all know already that if you have six companies with cable, and they all fight, now there's only two left. I mean, already you just got only two choices left. Already prices are going to go higher. You got less selections, less choices. No different. I think Orwell understood all that. That any, whether it be political, religious, financial, philosophical, any attempt at centralization is an attempt at taking away your freedom. Just keep that in mind. Wherever country you're out there listening to this program, centralization is always bad because it never allows consent. It never allows any kind of input because it's centralized. No, you can't say anything about this. This is all made to be efficient. Yeah, efficiency is not always that great either, especially in politics. Because again, the dissenters get smacked in the head or get thrown in jail. And the only people who get to speak are the people who already agree with that. And in the end, that's not freedom. Those are just parrots. Now, that's just propaganda, and that's just not correct on how we can have a free society. It's one of the great lessons we learned from Orwell. Be against centralization. It's the beginning of the end when you allow it. We see this many, many times. I was always fascinated by what happened with Ireland and Poland. You'll notice after they've got through their major conflicts, one of the Cold War, one of the English occupation, that you'll see the one of the forces they ran in there was the government. And the first thing they wanted, first thing that the church wanted to do in the government was, enforce their own rules. I mean, for a while there, you couldn't even have an abortion in Poland. Because the church wouldn't allow it. They had such a big influence in that. And they were doing the same thing in Ireland there for a while. So that's one of the things you have to be careful about, because in the end, you'll wind up training one dictatorship for another, or one centralization for another. And that's not really very helpful on having a free society. Those things need to be talked about. They need to be debated. Because there's room for many, many ideas. And I think that's one of the problems with democratic and free societies, is they start getting lazy because they think, oh, it's so hard to think about things, so hard to have so many choices. You know how many times I heard in the supermarket, there's too many choices, you know? I got to keep myself from going over there and punching somebody. What do you mean there's too many choices? When you go to Russia, go to their supermarket, see how many choices they got. Go to China, see what kind of choices you got. Yeah, you got government rice and maybe rice-a-roni. Maybe if you're lucky to have two, okay? Folks, choices are important. That's where our freedom comes from. This is what Orwell was teaching us. You can't be tired of it. You can't be lazy of it. You can't be against it. You can't mock it. Because once you do that, you're helping the forces to centralize. And then you don't have much left then. Then you'll be crying one day, I wish I had more choices. Well, that's what happens when you live like a child instead of an adult. Being an adult means that you have to fight for your freedom. Sometimes every day. Freedom's not free. You got to do something about it. In your language, in your thoughts, in your reading, in your voting, even in the way you interact with people. And as a writer, you have a great responsibility for all of those things. You should learn to take that more seriously. This is what Orwell was teaching us. And that's why he had such an impact in literature and in political thought and philosophy and even in our general lives. George Orwell. Definitely a social critic and a great thinker. Definitely an insightful writer. That someone that really told us about the future and how we can prevent it becoming just another nightmare of prisons and restrictions and a joyless life. Let's just keep that in mind. I always loved that guy, and I continue to sprout his praises throughout my entire life. I wrote a few essays about him. He's in a few of my books. So he's a real important figure definitely in my life, because he always reminded me about the nature of writing and the nature of freedom. And it really comes down to this fundamental point. You can't write unless you're in an environment of freedom. You can't call yourself a writer if you're not having your own thoughts out there. Okay? If you're just writing about somebody else's thoughts, you become less of a writer and become somebody's PR person, somebody's propagandist. It has to be your thoughts. And when you find confidence in your own thoughts, you're going to find out they're different than others. And that's where freedom comes from. The difference of opinion. The difference in choices. All of that becomes a rich environment that allows freedom. Yeah, it might allow some argument now and then. Yeah, it's going to maybe rub people the wrong way now and then. That's fine. There's nothing wrong with people being rubbed the wrong way now and then in society. Whether that makes some drama or that makes some conflict, that also makes a free society. Be frightened one day when you wake up and everybody agrees with each other. Nobody's upset. You're either in a nightmare or you're in a society that suddenly changed because it got lazy. I wish we can all agree. That's nonsense. There is no such thing as we can all agree. It really can't happen. We're just different people. Now, we can cooperate and work together to get certain things done as a group, as a city, as a government, as a nation. That's fine. But that's not the same thing we're all going to think in agreement. Because even when we're working together for a common goal, we have different thoughts about that common goal. Different slants, different things we like to do, different things we think we should be involved in. But that's what freedom is all about, that we can all be who we are. Not somebody else, not some agenda, not some platform, not some philosophy that somebody just made up yesterday. Oh, that's great. Think about things, folks. You'll stay free by staying the thinker. And you'll stay free by speaking out on things. And you'll stay free by writing what your thoughts are, not somebody else's. And that's how you're going to become a writer. That's how you'll stay a writer. And that's how you'll stay relevant. It's how George Orwell has stayed relevant. Because I'm sure he could have wrote some nonsense if he wanted to, but he never did. He was a serious guy. He wrote some serious things because he wanted to be who he's supposed to be. And he had all kinds of forces, including his own family. Take that safe civil job. Take that job teaching in the college. And I'm not saying anything's wrong with those, but they are wrong if they're not for you. If you're doing them for someone else rather than for yourself. So he chose for himself, and that worked out. And I honestly think there's many writers out there that could be great or could be doing things that don't. Because they allow fear, or their family, or even their faith get in the way. And the next thing you know, they're either writing stuff they don't really believe, writing stuff they really don't love or enjoy, or just stop writing. So, don't become in any of those categories, folks. Stay free by thinking for yourself. That's my last words on this. This was a classic spotlight, George Orwell and Strength to Be Human program. Until next time, folks, God bless, and thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you for listening. Please follow the show and visit our blog at strengthtobehuman.blogspot.com.